long holiday break, I want to welcome you all back to the Art Scene Podcast. You're listening to episode 14, and today's guest is Angela D'Avignon, a writer based out of Los Angeles who has contributed to publications such as Contemporary Art Review LA, The Vices Broadly, The Atlantic's City Lab, and The Washington Post. And before all of that, she was in San Diego where she coordinated exhibits for Helmuth Projects, a contemporary project space for artists. Now she is currently studying art history and women's, gender, and sexuality studies at Cal State Long Beach. I've been looking forward to speaking to Angela for a while, but as you can tell, she's a very busy person. Fortunately for me, she happened to be visiting the Bay Area during the holidays, and we were able to do the podcast in my living room. And now, here's our conversation. I'm glad we're able to finally do this.
Yeah.
Because originally we were supposed to do it via like Skype or something.
Like August?
Yeah. Yeah.
Back to school, and I was like, I just know that it's going to be crazy.
So it worked out when you told me that you were going to be in the Bay Area for the holidays. Yeah. So I was like, perfect.
Like, I know. Just, like, I like that it happened this way.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I like to do them more in person better than doing it over Skype.
Because
sometimes it'll get all like crackly over Skype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My internet's really bad at my house too. So it's better this way.
So what brings you to the Bay Area? Do you have friends up here?
I have a dear friend up here. My friend Jordan. She's a poet.
Okay.
And she teaches at Oakland School of the Arts. I try and visit her twice, three times a year.
Yeah.
Getting better at it. She has this sweet apartment in Oakland.
So I heard about you from Catherine Powers Nolan. We went to college together. Actually, I know Jay and Catherine because we both went to school together. Jay was 2 years ahead of me. She was 1 year behind me. They told me that you worked with them a lot over there in San Diego. So how did you get to meet them, I guess?
The origin story. Okay. Let's see. I worked at the New Children's Museum, and Jay was like the assistant to the director. And I kind of knew that there was, like, this, like, art crew, but I didn't know, you know, how it all worked together.
Yeah.
So, basically, I was kind of in a rut. I was in school. I wasn't happy, and I didn't really know what to do with myself. I think I was, like, 23 or 24. Kind of, like, languishing in Southern California. And I don't know how it came about, but I was like, I want to do an art show. Who wants to do it? And, like, all these people came in, and it ended up being kind of like a... That idea became like a magnet for people who had work and were making work or had just graduated and like needed some place to show. And San Diego's a bit of a gallery desert.
Yeah.
And huge gallery in comparison to LA, at least. I had enough energy. Basically, I was 23. So I was like, you know what? Let's just do this. So I was like running around. I like created a roster. I said yes to everyone. So it basically ended up being like a, I want to say there was like 27 women. It was an all women show. And I emailed around and found this loft space that these two dudes lived in. And I went in there and I was like, can I use your loft? And like brokered a little deal and we put on an art show.
Wow.
So it was all DIY because it was like our friend Matt was the preparator at the museum. So he knew how to install everything. Of course, Jay and Catherine knew how to install. So everyone just kind of like lended their talents and work and we installed a show and it went really well. And I think the momentum of that created like a new community basically. And we just continued doing art shows together.
And so you're originally from San Diego, right?
Yeah, born and raised.
Where, what part of San Diego are you from?
East County.
Which part? Which
city? Mesa.
Oh, okay. All right.
Mesa by Helix. Lemon Avenue.
Yeah. I grew up in Oceanside, California.
Okay.
So it's still San Diego County, but my dad worked downtown a lot and I obviously went to USD, but Mission Hills was like my neighborhood when I was living there before I moved up here.
Oh, that's a great neighborhood.
I lived where the Regal Beagle, that little hill, like literally right
like
up.
Gelato.
Yeah.
Four Point, right?
Yeah, like those apartments that are right above it
is
where
cool.
I lived. Yeah.
Okay.
It was great. I used to just walk out of my apartment.
Into
just,
like a little tiny like,
yeah,
area?
Yeah, go to Lucha Libre. I go to Shakespeare's. I can
so
go
good.
To Regal Beagle. Yeah. So then were you always interested in art growing up?
Yeah. And I went to a really small private Christian school. And I always say it's like barely accredited.
What school? What high school was it?
Christian High School.
Oh, yeah.
Right by Great Hills.
Yeah.
So that was like, basically it was like a project of the mega church there. And they're like, we'll start a school. And it was really small. And they like siphoned a lot of our funding out. So all of our equipment was old. We didn't have an art program. So basically I always wanted to, but because that atmosphere discouraged me from going into art because they were like, that's, you know, really
was it really like that? Were they really like that with
it
art?
It was draconian. Yeah, it was. It was just creativity wasn't honored at that school. So they were, my parents were like, yes, be creative. I was in theater.
Right.
They like put me in art classes, but it was never what I was looking for, kind of a more, I think, I don't know, just less about form and more about like contemporary art. I was looking for something like that and I couldn't find it for so long. So when I finally did find it at the New Children's Museum, I was like,
well, during your high school years, what were you doing to basically be creative if you weren't able to do that in high school?
Well, I had, my dad built me a dark room, which was really generous of him because I love taking pictures.
Okay.
So I like got a camera at the thrift store and went to like, got some film at that really cool camera store. Nelson's?
Yes. Like, I went there a lot in college.
Obsessed with Nelson's. Would just be in there and be like, well, what is this? You know, and kind of just like taught myself how to do photography. And then also I had blank books. Like my parents were really supportive of me being independently creative. So they would like buy me blank books. They'd buy me colored pencils. They'd buy me like art supplies basically.
Right.
And I would just sit in my room and do collage. And,
Well, how was high school? Because I've read, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but because
well, you know.
I read the Washington Post piece. So I really am interested to hear like how your high school experience was, because he did make it sound like it was just not a fun experience.
No, not really. I mean, high school, let's see, 9/11 happened right in the middle of high school. So there was I had this like weird cognitive dissonance where I was radicalizing politically, but I was in a household that was super conservative, very Christian, and in a Christian environment. So like my history teacher at the time was on reserve. I forget what it's called. Reserve?
In the military?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in the reserves. Yeah.
Written in the reserves, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So he would like wear his outfit to, he would be in, I know.
That's a little much.
Soldier, I mean,
my
Lord,
my high school football coach was in the reserves, but he never wore his uniform
this
to
work.
This
guy would wear it every now and then. Like he would wear his fatigue sometimes. I don't know. He was weird. But he was like really into it. He's like, oh yeah, we're going to war. You know, it was like very weird orientalist, like the bad guys over there. And I don't know, a lot of the media was changing at the time.
Yeah.
An embedded journalist. So I was reading like Adbusters and like Al Jazeera like, secretly in my room while, you know, the rest of my family and crew were pro war. But so that kind of, that really influenced the way I felt about my environment in high school. And then also I felt like I was so hungry to be creative and like have an outlet that it just drove me. I was doing it. I feel like I had these blank books. I have like 30 from high school, I want to say, that I was just like constantly making. Cause I wanted to like find someone who could like nurture that in me, and I never found it. I had friends, I had like mentors who were interested in my work, or in, not in my work, because it really wasn't work, but like interested in my output, and they were still in this environment too. So I was kind of like looking for like the woman in all black with the tiny glasses who would like come down from San Francisco and like teach me what art was, you know, but I never found it. So I just was like, okay, if I keep making, someone will see me. It was like a death drive in a way. Like I have to just keep making until something cracks or I find my way into the art world. Just ended up taking a really long time.
It's crazy that I think like just by misfortune, like you were in the most conservative part of like San Diego County, because the eastern part of the county is very conservative, very conservative.
Yeah. And I remember like I would, when I learned how to drive, I got a car and I like would take this old Volvo that my dad gave me and I would like drive it down to like university thinking that was like the city. You know?
Right. Yeah.
I would go to like Pancho Villas and be like, this is culture. You know, like, I mean, and it was compared to where I was,
growing up. Yeah, absolutely. So now you go through high school and did you not go to college straight from high school because either because of grades or was it just because not just very interested in it?
Both. So I just assumed I couldn't get into college because I hated school so much. And I just assumed that that's what school was.
Right.
Just like this boring, like I couldn't break through into something that I found interesting in school. So I just ignored it basically.
Right.
I would like read, I would put my books in front of my textbooks and just like pretend to be reading. I had really bad grades. And then also I had like this like weird spiritual meltdown my senior year of high school where I was like, okay, all I have going for me is like Christianity. Cause this is like the thing I know the most about.
Yeah.
I have to just go for it. Cause I didn't know how to put together a portfolio for an art school. Like I just knew I had to get myself out of town. So I signed up for this like monastic Bible school. You know, this is the weirdest part of my story. Everyone's like, what was it? It was this program called the Joshua Wilderness Institute. It was an institute. Mm-hmm. It was a discipleship program is what they called it. So basically...
Where was this?
In the National Sequoia Forest.
Oh, wow.
In a place called Hume Lake.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was gorgeous, but it was just really weird. And like, I hated it half the time. Most of the time I hated it. But I, put myself in this... I applied for it, got in. I made a collage for my application. Of like the mountains.
Right.
Yeah, they were like, ooh, you're creative. I'll put you in. It was dedicated to the teachings of Christ. And the idea was cool. The idea was like, you sit in the woods and you like, we didn't listen to music for 9 months. Didn't read any magazines, I think, were off limits. Maybe not. I don't know. We're not allowed to watch movies, TVs. And you just sat and thought about I guess. I thought about your life. I just had like meltdown after meltdown, basically.
During this whole, how long were you?
It was structured. I was there for 2 years, but I was hired on as an assistant. There's like two. So the structure of the program was, I'll do the mission and the structure. So the mission was, these are the teachings of Christ.
Right.
Study them in depth. Also, we studied like comparative worldviews, philosophy, apologetics. We had like life skills class, which is like how to change a tire and learn how to sew and here's how you do your taxes, here's how you vote, you know?
Wow.
A lot of us were 18 and fresh to the world, but.
Well, I guess that was a good thing, right? That
they were
teaching those things. Yeah, because I feel like even today, even a normal 18-year-old, like, even a 20-year-old wouldn't know those things.
No, like separate your whites and your colors and your laundry. Right. Yeah. How much soap you put in. Like, I didn't, so that was the mission. And then the structure was like very rigid. Like we all woke up at the same time. We all had like meditation for an hour after breakfast. We all ate together. We all did class together. We did chores together. Like we cleaned the building once a week. We went on mission trips where we went and saw different ways that people did Christianity. So it was, it was really cool on paper, and it was a good experience. It was just like too much for me.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what did you feel you got out of it? Like, what are the pluses and the minuses of that experience?
It pushed me to the edge of myself in a lot of ways where I was like, all right, I need this much alone time in the day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like doing this. These type of people drive me nuts. Like, I react this way in the situation. So it kind of just, like, threw me into myself, basically.
Right.
And also, it was a really intense discipline to have that rigid of a schedule and to work that hard. Like, I feel like I worked so hard every weekend because it was a conference center. So they would have us on the weekend, you worked 3 weekends out of the month and it would be like dishwashing or waitressing, or you worked as the fry person in the diner.
Right.
It was like Twin Peaks kind of mountain town, but Christian.
Yeah.
I worked as like a controlled burn fire person for a week.
Wow.
A weekend. That was really cool. And then the summer, it was a summer camp. So it was a lifeguard.
Yeah.
I just like did all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
So then where did you go from there? So like you get tired of it, you get out.
Yeah.
And so where do you go?
By the end of it, so I worked the second year I worked there as like, they were called deputies, but basically I was like the goon for the director, basically.
Yeah.
I was like lackey or whatever.
You worked hard enough where they liked you.
Yeah, they were like, I think I was like their third pick too. And they made sure I knew that. They were like, well, we asked her and then we asked her and then they said no. So we want you. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. It was good money.
Yeah.
And everything was taken care of. So I was like, I don't know what I'm doing with my, I don't want to go home. It sounds depressing. So I just did that for another 9 months and a summer. And then by the end of it, I was so burnt out. I was like, the woods are gorgeous, but like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And went home and like tried to keep it up. But I was just like, I don't want to be Christian. I don't think I ever was, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like I pushed it to its limit.
Yeah.
And I gave it all the energy I could and then was like, I've done enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to be secular now. I don't want to be a Jesus freak anymore.
Yeah.
I just want to be a regular freak.
It's interesting because like I grew up super Catholic.
Oh, okay.
Not so Catholic where it was like my
parents.
They let
you, I feel like they don't like get into your personal life as much.
Yeah. You know, it's funny growing up for me, like I went to church in Carlsbad. And most of the kids were like surfer bros. But, you know, for me, I think with Catholicism, I think what I missed the most was just the routine of going somewhere where you knew other people.
Yeah.
But that's what attracted me the most.
Totally.
Not so much I got to go on my knees every Sunday, pray the rosary. I mean, not that I'm like anti that because it's just so embedded in my culture and my upbringing, but it's not, I don't think that that's the end all be all.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the idea of like going somewhere. I miss that like community.
Right.
I'm really grateful for the way I was raised. I feel like I have, I don't want to say standards. I'm trying to judgmental in 2017, but I feel like I have like, be kind to people just because you should be, not because you're going to get something out of it or, you know, just being as generous as you feel is okay. You know, like I'm really grateful for that upbringing and the community I was around. Like, I still keep in touch with a lot of people that I grew up with.
Yeah.
A lot of us are like, see you at the bar, don't tell my mom, you know,
right, or whatever. Yeah, exactly.
So.
All right, so where do you go back? You didn't go back home. Where'd you go?
Oh, to my mother's house. So my parents' house. That was like, I feel like I was like, that was the real wilderness at that point. I got
going home.
Yeah. I went home and I like had never, I turned 21. I had never drank before.
So from like high school to 21, you're at this place. Yeah, this
18 to 21. Yeah.
Wow.
I get home. Yeah, I know. I get home in fall of whatever year it was, and I turned 21 that winter, and I was like, I love drinking, and so I just kind of just like became a party girl.
Yeah.
But like in like I wasn't like going out to parties really, but it was more of like a go sit in the bar and drink until I can't see straight, and I just like was testing those limits now.
Yeah.
And it was like a whole different. Realm of limits, and you know, that was, I didn't get into too much trouble, I don't think. Now I'm like, when did I? I don't remember if I did. So I like was a drunk for probably 21 to 25.
That makes sense.
It's like right on schedule, pretty much.
Right, you're drinking. I'm going to work, then I'm going to go drink.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, I feel like I had like 15 jobs in that time span, so I was just kind of bouncing around, being like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I know I like art still. I know I love writing. So I was in school for journalism for a long time.
Like where were you? Like City College types?
City College, yeah. Yeah. It was at City College.
Yeah.
I loved it there. I loved that program, and I was like, maybe I'll go to radio. I started like dabbling with that. I was like, it'd be cool if I was like a sound engineer, because like there's like no girls in sound engineering.
What attracted you to do that? Like journalism? Like why?
I always loved it. I loved writing and I loved being on my feet and I loved being like just news, you know? Like I wanted to like hop in the car and like drive to the thing and write about it, you know? Like I liked the idea of like just traveling and writing.
Yeah.
And like being on the scene and being independent and having to hype really fast. Like I loved that.
Right.
Yeah. I think we had like in my journalism lab class, we had to take a AP report and then turn it into like a 50 word, report. And it was like 10 minutes and you had to type it up and I was like really good at it. And I just loved it. So I thought maybe I'd be like a foreign correspondent or something. Plus it was still wartime. So I was like, this would be great.
Right. Well, were you still, your interest in art, was that still in the back of your mind during this whole
Absolutely,
time?
Absolutely, yeah. I think I thought I'd be an art writer, too, on the side. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. But there's this, like, organization that actually Jordan, who I'm staying with, she was affiliated with. It was called Sezio. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, this, it was a bunch of kids from Point Loma Nazarene. And there was, like, a streak of years when the art that they were all making was really good. Mm-hmm. Like, that was, like, where the art was coming from for a while. And it was just really good. And there's all of them. And they had this like kind of like churchy vibe to it. So I was like, I don't know what this is. Like I recognize it.
It looks like the best of both worlds for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I was like, this is a perfect marriage of my logistics. So yeah, it was like churchy people who aren't really that churchy, who are into art and music. So we basically put on events. I did all the write-ups with Jordan. Jordan did, and then I did because she left for school up here. And that was kind of like the next kind of catalyst that took me to doing the art show on my own.
Yeah.
And then that eventually ended up taking root with Helmuth, which is like the project space that I was then.
Right.
Yeah.
So then during, what kind of jobs were you doing? Like, so like you're going to school, like, so what are the multiple jobs that you do? Are you trying to do journalistic jobs or, you know, were you working like art galleries or whatever the few that were in San Diego?
I know, the one, probably didn't have jobs for me. I worked, so many jobs. I worked at the museum.
Which one?
The New Children's Museum.
Right.
I worked there. I worked at this like music lessons company. startup. I hated it. I worked at a restaurant for a while. That didn't work out. I feel like it's just like blips of stuff. So just like random stuff. A lot of museums. I worked at every museum, I think, in San Diego, pretty much.
What attracted you to go to work at museums?
Because I knew the world.
You knew all the people who worked at all those places.
Yeah, I knew the people, and it was easy. It was like, oh, you know this person, they're looking for, you know, museum guards. So I went from like the New Children's Museum to the Model Train Museum to the San Diego Museum of Art to the Museum of Contemporary Art.
Tell me about the Model Train Museum.
Model Train Museum, because that was a trip.
I went there when I was like, I don't know, 12.
I walked in and I was like, it's the same, but smaller. Yeah. I remember the trains being bigger, even though they're literally like tiny trains. I think it was eye height with the... that was a trip because it was a bunch of like these older dudes who've been into model trains for who knows how long.
Yeah.
But this hobby has turned into like a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And now there's this space that it's all contained for them. So there's like different clubs, different scales. They would change them seasonally. So like Christmas, they would be putting out tiny like wreaths on the doors. You know, I don't know how these huge men in overalls, like a lot of them were like train outfits on a regular basis. I don't know how they like got. I don't know how it works.
I know. It's the, yeah. All right. So then now you start working with Helmuth projects, right?
Yeah.
Is that when you kind of felt like, okay, maybe art's my thing? Not really journalism.
Pretty much. I think I got to a point with journalism too where I was, I felt like a vulture in a weird way. I felt like I was more interested in getting the story than the story itself. It was really competitive. It was kind of a morbid story, but there was a woman who was killed on campus at City, and it was me and this other guy who were trying to get the scoop, and he somehow ended up, he got the scoop because I kind of was like, I don't know how to handle this. One, two, I felt guilty forcing my way into like a private space where these people are mourning, and it was in a different neighborhood than I knew. I don't know. I just didn't feel real being in that space and getting this story, or like acting like I was, I don't know. I just didn't like that feeling of entering someone's home and being like, I'm here to like report on your life. So
I guess like, because I guess that's the thing about reporters, that they have that skill where they're able to kind of disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
Like I am neutral. I'm biased. I don't know these people. Cannot get emotionally attached.
Right. Yeah. And this guy, and he like got the scoop, and it was a really good scoop, and it was like he won an award for it, whatever, like a school award. But I'm like rolling my eyes because I didn't get the scoop. But also he ended up at like the memorial in their backyard.
Oh wow.
Of this like this family, and I was like I read it, and I was like a little bit jealous, but I was like I don't think I can. I'm not cut out for this. Like I can't. Yeah. Go to someone's house and not be moved by this, or act like I'm not moved by it, or like help them put the dishes away. I don't know. Like I felt like I would like want to actually be there, and be present instead of writing down like who, what they were wearing and when they started crying. Mm-hmm. It just felt really detached from me. And I also discovered some artists who did work that was like journalism, but it was art. So I was like, okay, like there's a bridge here.
Right.
I'm going to cross it into this other territory.
I'm starting to see a theme here.
Yeah.
You're finding a lot of bridges from one thing to
my life is just a series of bridges. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's like how life really works out, right? Like
right.
Something
yeah.
like that happens.
Do you think you have a plan? And it totally just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So basically after I put on the art show, I was like, okay, I'm good at this. Like I can make this happen. I kind of like started looking into what museum work would be like. Mm-hmm. I started this 2-semester program at MESA, which is the Museum Studies program run by Alessandra Montezuma.
Mm-hmm.
She really pushed me. She was like, you can write, you can organize, like your presence, you can do this.
Right.
So she like pushed me really hard, which I needed. So she was kind of the like sophisticated woman that I was looking for the whole time, being like, you've got this, like,
right.
do this. And it wasn't making work so much, it was facilitating other people. Organizing. Yeah.
So now that you're taking these courses over at MESA, are you doing more and more shows at Helmuth?
Yeah. So the thing with Helmuth is Josh, who runs it, I guess we didn't have titles at the time, but I think he's considered the director now, but it's just him basically. He was good friends with Jay. Him and Jay, were trying to get their space off the ground, which was basically like out of the garage. So
right, that's the URDNZA.
Yeah, that group. Yeah, so that was a group of them, and they had this garage space at Josh's sister's house, and they were trying to do projects out there, and they were making really cool stuff. I was really unfamiliar with contemporary and conceptual art, so that's kind of like where I started. And they were like, well, what about, you know, this guy? And they'd bring him up in conversation. And I'd be like, I don't even know that name. And I'd be like looking it up when I got home, and I like made a list of artists to look into. So basically that was like a crash course of like, I want to know as much as these people know.
Right.
And even more, you know, I want to figure this out for myself. So hanging out with them was, that was like a really fun time because we were all doing shows out of each other's living rooms. Mm-hmm. And then Josh had this cool storefront down on 5th over by Pokey's on that same block.
Oh yeah.
Or 10th.
Which Pokey's is one of my favorite Mexican restaurants.
I mean, it's the best. So he had this like perfect space for it and he built it out. And it became Helmet Products.
Yeah.
So it started there. And I think because I was trying to do stuff too, I was very much like, have you seen West Side Story?
Yeah.
Like girl in the gang who's like, I could do it too. You know, like yeah. I was very much like pushing myself into this role of trying to, you know, facilitate more shows and also like act as a curator and type up all the press releases and be the person on call. So like try to make myself like as important as possible. And it worked because I think my philosophy for that at the time was like, say yes to every job you can get, like say yes to every opportunity, take all the tasks you can and just do them really well. And then people will know you for your work and will ask you to do something because you've done it before. So I was basically doing that.
No, it's a great philosophy. Yeah. I try to live by that all the time. I tell that to younger like kids that are in college all the time.
Yeah.
Like don't ever say no to something that seems a little bit interesting to you.
Like make up a job.
Yeah.
And be really good at it. Yeah. So I was just making stuff up basically. There's actually this podcast that I listened to about writers, long form. Okay. And they had a writer on that I really like. And she had read this like book about power in the 80s. And it was a joke book. Or a satirical book. And one of the power rules was seize neutral territory.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could do that. So I started doing that. It really worked. So yeah. And then Helmuth moved to its now location on 5th next to SRO. Bar. And Tasha's Music City.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's a cool little block. There's a tattoo shop. And that's where it is now. I don't know what's going on with it because I moved to Long Beach and kind of stopped keeping track of everything. But
Well, tell me about your move to Long Beach. So what made you, at what point did you decide that you're going to transfer to a four-year university?
Yeah.
Like, and why Long Beach?
I didn't pick Long Beach. I didn't get to any other school but Long Beach. So I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
It was cheap. Super cheap. My friend actually applied there and she didn't end up going. And I was like, that's the only reason why I checked it. Like I went back and checked it on the thing. And only, I think I applied to like 3 schools and I didn't have the right paperwork or something. So I was kind of just like, I don't know why I'm doing this. But then Long Beach was like, congrats. And here's half the money for school. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess I'll just go. Long Beach seems chill. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And I just moved to Long Beach. And and that's what I'm doing now.
Before we talk about your college experience,
sure.
So when did you start writing? Because a lot, you know, when did you start like wanting to publish stuff or looking to get published? And
yeah, the whole time. So I guess I've been writing since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. So I guess when I was my mom, the famous like family story is that I would like sit my mom down and be like, I need you to dictate this for me. I don't know how to write yet. I'm 3 or like 4. I was like, couldn't write yet. And I was like, I need you to write this down. This is the story I have.
Right.
She would like write my stories down for me. Always wanted to write. Always wrote. I didn't really take it seriously. Writing was a way for me to figure out what my thoughts were in general. So I think I had a poem published when I was a kid in some book. And I think that's when I was like, oh, like I'm actually a writer. Like I'm going to be somebody. So writing was also on the like list of things I could possibly do, but also wasn't encouraged as much by like school or any classes that I took.
Right, because the high school you went to wasn't very...
Yeah, they were. I think my teachers like knew I'd like to do it, but it wasn't something that like, I don't know.
That they encouraged?
Yeah, it wasn't. I think I was like looking for a very intense like... that Poet Society kind of a vibe for my classroom experience that I just didn't get. And I was in uniform, but nothing like that was happening to me. So I was kind of like disenchanted with school in general. So I was not paying attention to any of my teachers. So they probably thought like, she's just, let's just get her through.
Right.
This.
Right.
Well,
like what was like the moment where you're like, cause I'm assuming it had to be during that time you're back in San Diego after
yeah.
And you know, between the ages of 21 and 25 that right. you kind of were like, you know what? I just need to write down everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
I was writing throughout the whole experience of being in the woods and then being back. I think when I met Jordan, she is a writer as well, poet, writer. She had a good grasp on how to get published, and she was writing for that website, Sezio. So she kind of plugged me in and was like, you are a really good writer. Like, you should pursue this. Here's what I do. And so that was a, let me think. I'm like blinking out. Oh, okay. So I met my friend Jess, who works for the ACLU, or who worked for the ACLU. She was dating this guy who had this writing program, but it was like a performative writing program. And they would meet together once a month, come up with a theme, and then everyone would write on the theme, and it was mostly creative nonfiction. And you would workshop each other's pieces, and then you would read them in the Whistle Stop bar based on this theme.
I love that bar.
I mean, it's a staple. Right. It's a great bar. Yeah. So basically, it was like a very confessional time, too, because they were very confessional essays, and I was basically like doing stand-up with an essay in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I think I wrote about the time I tried to speak in tongues. Didn't work out. I wrote an essay about just like kind of like growing up Christian in high school. And I think that like confessional style of writing helped me work out a lot of what I was going through at the time, which was like losing my faith basically mm-hmm. and letting it go. So I did that for a while, and that really taught me like how to take criticism, how to do crits with myself and how to do it with others. Kind of like broke me in for being able to take edits, mm-hmm. essentially. And then I didn't really start really writing until this last year. I turned 30 last year and was like, you know what? I really need to like start taking myself seriously at some, like I need to actually go for it. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend who was doing really well writing, and I asked her how to pitch basically. She taught me how to pitch, and then I just kind of took off from there.
Yeah. Well, I've read some of your stuff.
Cool.
And it's very interesting because you provided, I mean, I looked on your website, but you
provide, everything's there.
Right. But it's quite an interesting sample because you have three different types of writing.
Right.
You've done, there was this, well, obviously like feminism seems to be a big topic that
you're. Huge topic for me, yeah.
Right.
And I studied gender in school.
Okay. So yeah, I was going to ask you that too. Like, what did you, but you study gender.
Sorry. Art history and gender.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the first couple articles that I read had to do with, there was one in history about shaving heads, women shaving their heads. Uh-huh. There was the color pink. Uh-huh. Those two, they're very well written.
Thank you.
But interestingly, they're written like a historical paper.
Yeah.
But like engaging.
Right.
So like, but then I read your art reviews. Completely different.
Yeah.
Well, short, and then we were just mentioning earlier about the skill that you had to learn about writing an AP report in like 50 words.
Yeah.
And it was very much what that art critique was, those art critiques were.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point, this is what it is.
That's the toughest assignments. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when did you start doing that? Like, what made you want to do those? Because they're being published in like, I mean, they're not the New York Times or anything, but they're decent enough publications where you know, people do read what you're writing.
Right. Carla. Yeah. So another friend from that Point Loma Art San Diego crew, Lindsay, Lindsay Preston Zappas. she's awesome. She moved to LA after grad school and started this publication called Carla, Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Because I feel like since the recession to now, like criticism has really gone by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think within the art world, because the market took it over, it's less motivated by what's good and more by what will sell or it seems like a really social economy. So believing that criticism was necessary, that's how she started that publication. And LA doesn't really have a really strong art publication. I think we have the LA Times. We have like our guy, Christopher Knight, who writes about art. But there's no like small satellite publication that I know of. I know there's another one like Art Journal, I think is what it's called. Art Papers, maybe. Anyway, there's Extra, based out of LA. But yeah, so basically those are called snap reviews, and they have to be 250, give or take, but like give or take by 5 words, mm-hmm. and they have to be to the point. So she had this website called Carrots and Sticks, which was out of Michigan, where she was going to grad school at Cranbrook. And it was a similar thing where she would just ask me to write something about, I had like a blog series for a month, and it was about summer crafts. I forget. It was like cold crafts. Yeah. I forget. But I wrote about eggs, Fabergé eggs and clown eggs and culture, visual culture of eggs, which was like really exciting research for me.
That's what I loved about all your, writing. That was like, I would have never thought
weird
about
stuff,
learning
yeah.
about this, but now I feel informed and I love it. Like, yeah. you know, like about the history of women shaving their heads.
Yeah,
I
right?
never would have like thought, but it was cool. I loved it.
Yeah. It's my, all my work is basically like a Google search, like a list of my Google queries late at night.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, I just use writing to kind of like explore a topic that I think is interesting. And then also a lot of it is tied to what I'm learning in school, basically, and what stood out to me and what I took the most notes on. And the school to me now is kind of like an extension of my own curiosity, because I feel like I taught myself how to learn up until this point, basically. Yeah, so those reviews are really tough to write, and I feel like I've learned a lot. It's been rough and tumble because those edits are always really hard to take, because it's basically what you think about art. And the editors I work with at Carla are, like, really nice. I feel like I have this relationship with an invisible person because I've never met him in real life. I'm looking forward to meeting him, but he's always kind of like, well, what did you mean by this? Or this contradicts itself. And I'm always like, I only have 2 days and 250 words. Like, I'm so stressed out. Yeah. But it's been such a good exercise to, like, train my eye and focus immediately while I'm in the space and being like, okay, I like this, I don't like this, what's wrong with this, why is this standing out to me, is this just pretty, what is it really saying, which is a good exercise in looking. But also there's something to be said about sitting with the work for a long time, too.
Right.
So I think once my schedule changes, I'll be able to do longer pieces about art instead of just being like, like looking around madly.
No, I kind of like the short ones, though, because because I've read longer ones and I get bored, like, what, about halfway through?
So fast, yeah.
Yeah, and the short ones I feel are the thing about what most people do with short ones is they don't give me enough sometimes.
Right, yeah, or it's a description.
Right,
yeah.
And it's just a description, exactly, but I don't get, what do you think,
you know?
But yours seem to do both. Like, a little bit, I feel like, yeah, at least I got an idea of, like, all right, so she didn't like the show.
I'm glad that comes true, because I'm always trying to be, like, I'm not trying to be nice, because I really have nothing to lose, but, yeah.
Yeah.
At least a point came across, that's good, yeah.
All right, so then the third type of writing that I noticed, which is what I mentioned earlier I wanted to talk about, was such as the Washington Post story that you wrote, which was actually about your experiences.
Right.
Which you mentioned earlier, too, that you when you were starting out to write, that's what you did. You started writing about your experiences.
Right.
This the piece you wrote for the Washington Post was about your experience being a 30-year-old in college.
Yep.
Which was very interesting.
Right.
Because I'm 29, and I didn't wait to go to college. I went straight through.
Yeah.
When I worked there as an employee, I worked in the parent relations department.
Oh, cool.
So I had a lot of interactions with parents who were what we like to call helicopter parents, where they're hovering their kids all the time. And we also had interaction with kids who were babied by their parents.
Right.
And just completely inexperienced. And even for me, I don't know, at the time it was like 23, 24.
Right.
That was weird to me. Like, I'm getting mad at these kids, like, you guys are ridiculous. Like you guys are unprepared for anything.
Right,
like,
yeah.
And that was me at 23, 24, noticing that was starting to be a trend.
Right.
So you touched on that in that piece. You know, well, first tell me about college, because now, because I got a glimpse of it through that Washington Post story, but tell me, what are you hoping it was going to be?
Oh my gosh, I didn't know what it was going to be. I think I was hoping that it would be easier to find friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still don't really have a community in Long Beach yet. And people are always like, oh, you know, you don't really know a place until you've lived there for like 3 years.
Right.
So I'm on year two. I'm on year one. Yeah, I'm going on my second year there. I think I just pictured it. I think I just felt like I would find more of my kind sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Only because I was in the art department and I just kind of assumed that there would be like arty people there. And there are. They're just so young.
Yeah.
I think I just didn't anticipate how young everyone who was visible was. So it took some digging to find the grad students. Mm-hmm. The grad studios are literally underground under the psychology building. So there's like no way I would have found them anyway.
Yeah.
I just found them. So I think the first year was really intense because I was a sponge. Like I was noticing everything for the first time. So I was feeling more lost than I do now. Now I know where the women's department is. Now I know where my favorite spot in the library. I know where the art students are. I know where my teacher I can go hang out with is.
Right.
But the first year was just kind of a huge shock.
Which is normal, by the way.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think it matters how old you are. I think the first year is a shock.
Right. Yeah. And just being in a new city and not knowing where anything is.
Right.
And I was in kind of a weird neighborhood. So, yeah, I think writing that piece was kind of me taking revenge on feeling like I was behind.
Yeah.
And also kind of making sure people knew that this experience was legitimate.
Right.
Because when I did find the other people who were my age in school, it was kind of like, this program isn't suited to us, but there's actually a lot more people who are considered non-traditional. And Long Beach is a really diverse city and a really diverse school. Mm-hmm. So there's more kids who are on scholarship or on financial aid or who are the first kid in their family right. going to college. And it's just the systems. It's just, I don't know.
Do you think that's applicable only to Long Beach State, or do you think that's...
I think it's probably less of a problem at California State Schools because... Yeah. I've always been impressed with Long Beach's, like, their communication, the way they handle things, their website. I mean, that's not really something that is important.
No, but yeah. It kind of is. I mean, because, you know, when I worked at USD, and that's a private school.
Right.
I remember the website changed like 5 times in the 4 years that I went to college.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I do, you know, when I was there as a student, mm-hmm. I was involved in the orientation program.
Oh, okay.
So I was one of the students that helped put on the festivities events, right? And one member of the group was in charge of, who was a transfer student himself, and he was older. He was a little older than what he was supposed to be.
Right.
His job was to welcome the transfer students and then make sure that they were welcome.
Right.
And I remember that was always a struggle because the thing about transfer students, a lot of them were older and they didn't feel included.
Right.
But then by the time I started working there as an employee, that completely changed. Now they have their own office, and they're not the only ones. Like campuses are now have their own office for veterans that transfer in now. Yeah. They have an office for transfers. They have an office for it's insane, which is great.
It's important. Yeah.
I feel like I do remember that was a big concern, that transfers feeling not included.
Right.
Not feeling part of the... Yeah, they slip through the cracks and then they transfer again. Which
Yeah. Like, where do we hang out? Like,
right.
Everyone's 19.
But, and as an undergrad, you know, being 19 or 20 and being a class, I love the older guys.
Older people.
Mainly because they were... Well, one, they were over 21 most of the time. So that was great. I think the second part was they just were able to tell us about stuff that was five years away from what we were thinking.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And have you been able to find yourself as kind of like that kind of person?
Or
like to some of the undergrads in the art department?
Absolutely. I think I was on work study last year, so I was in the museum. I've been working in the museum on campus, which is an amazing museum.
It's a great museum. Yeah.
I know. I had no idea. And there was a lot of younger kids who worked there. And I remember one weekend, one girl was like, my friend just did drugs for the first time. I'm like, afraid. And she's kind of like, lose her mind. And she's like, panicking about drugs. And I was like, all right, girl, sit down. Let's talk about drugs. You know? And I was like,
first, what type of drug?
Yeah. What drug was it? And how much did she take? Yeah. So I basically kind of like coached her through.
Yeah.
You know, talking about drugs. And I was like, this is a rewarding moment for me, even though it's just drugs, you know, it's like, she's not going to die.
Right.
Maybe don't take that much next time, you know, just demystifying things. Because I remember being that age and I was in the woods being like, I don't know how anything works in the world. And I'm also not in the world.
Right.
And then coming back and being like, I don't know how to get a beer, you know, get a tab off a beer.
Right.
Whatever. So, yeah, there's been moments like that. I had I was in a group text with bunch of classmates who are all under 25, and that was really eye-opening. Like the group, the priorities, and I don't know. Kids are a lot, like an old person now, but kids are a lot smarter and way more savvy than I was.
Yeah.
like just the way they talk and what they're into and what's cool. I think the internet has, made kids cooler.
They're
so cool.
When I worked on campus, I mean, even now, I am still friends with a lot of people who still work there.
Yeah.
And I'll go on campus and meet randomly some kids.
Yeah.
And I'm impressed with how resourceful they are about, I mean, if they're, I feel like a lot more than I was, or at least my generation was when we were going to school. If they are interested in something, they're starting the club tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that wasn't as much when I was going to college.
Yeah.
And then they make a difference with it. Then they're on the news.
Yeah.
They
know how to make a space for themselves.
They do. Yeah. They do. And I think that's just going to get, that's going to grow more and more.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But otherwise, like, I mean, in this Washington Post piece, you talk a lot about, you hang out a lot with the professors more than you do with the undergrads.
They're like my age or younger.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And how have you found that experience? Like, how has that been beneficial to your education?
I think educators are the best people in the world. They work so hard.
Yeah.
They care about their work. They care about their students. And they're just always available to you. So I added a minor. I took a women's studies class for one of my, it's called a capstone, which was like a class that, an additional class that you take to round out your undergrad. And so I took a women's studies class and I loved it so much. And I like went to the department, like they have a lunch, like a brown bag lunch. And I went and like met everyone and I was like, I want to be with you guys. Yeah. You guys are cool. Or you all are cool. That'd be the right pronoun. So I added a minor and that was kind of a way for me to find a group of people to hang out with, basically. Right. So I've been building a few relationships with different professors, but I think because I'm older and my input in class, like I think I referenced like the Reagan administration in the class and everyone else was like, huh? And I was like, oh yeah, the Iran-Contra. And no one really knew what I was talking about. But my professor looked at me like, all right, you know, like we were maybe in high school at the same time. Like, okay, girl. So it's been good to make more connections with, they're more in my realm anyway.
Right. So what are you hoping to get? Well, I guess, you know what, before I ask you because I've been curious to know about this. How did you get it published in the Washington Post?
In the Washington Post?
Yeah.
Well, I'm in this writing group on Facebook, which is it's called Binders, Full of Women. it's basically a Facebook group, like a support group for women writers or women, people who identify as women or gender non-binary writers. And basically we just share resources and I made a few friends and there are people who write for like Forbes and there's like a whole range of like careers. So there's people just starting out and there's like mom bloggers and there's like history writers like me and women who write about feminism. And so basically someone just passed me the email contact. It's also really easy to find an editor's email. And I just emailed her the pitch and the original pitch was about something else. Think about how our generation kind of slipped through the cracks because of the recession and like it was like more of a millennial. I thought that's what they wanted. And she was like, I'm actually more interested in this, like, aside that you mentioned being 30 in college. Like, what is that like? So I wrote the piece that way and she did edits and ta-da.
It's great.
Yeah, it was easy.
I think it was, I think if anybody wanted to know who you were, that's like the best piece to read.
I'll send
about
that
who you
off,
were.
Print it out, and give it to people.
Yeah. Listen, my name's Angela. Here's
what you need.
Read this, and then we'll have lunch.
Yeah. I mean, an editor can make or break your piece. I have another piece that was basically an extension of my research about women in the cities, and I don't really like the way that piece got edited, which is neither here nor there. but I think that was kind of like a crash course in like learning how to work with an editor. And my rule is always take edits because they know what their publication is looking for.
Right.
And then I only draw a hard line if an idea is getting twisted. But with her, like Jennifer, the woman I worked with at the Washington Post, she was such an easy editor and she just made me sound more like myself, which is a dream from an editor. It's a dream relationship is that like an editor really understands what the writer's trying to say and tweaks it so that it works for the publication and it sounds more like yourself, which what more could you ask?
Well, and then like I mentioned, I think your piece gave a voice to the other, like, over, I think the overlooked population at an undergraduate,
right,
or at a university.
Yeah.
Everyone knows. Yeah, we hear about minorities. We hear about first-generation students.
Right.
We hear about, you know, international students.
Right.
But I think transfers and the older students that, you know, took time off.
Yeah.
I think those get overlooked.
Right.
Yeah.
And the response to that essay was nothing but positive. It was like, oh, I'm a transfer.
Yeah.
Thank you for, like, bringing this up, because this is how I feel. And it kind of feels like it's a privilege to go to college, but it's different to go later.
Right.
And I kind of feel embarrassed about it for whatever reason, because our, you know, narrative about college is geared towards younger people. And yeah, and then all the comment section was just like older people being like, I didn't go to college, I was 40. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is cool. Like, this is, there is no traditional approach, or there's no right way to approach an education.
No.
And when people are like, oh, I'm having kids and I don't know if I'll go back, I was like, just go back. Just try. Go back to school.
Yeah. I think you're right. I don't think it matters how you got there.
Yeah.
I think it matters if you find that you need to go and you get it done.
Right.
I think that's what it,
that,
get
that's that paper.
Most, yeah, that's, yeah, exactly. That's the most
get that little piece of paper.
Yep. Yeah.
A degree is just like a piece of paper. And I totally believe that argument. I just feel like for what I wanted to go into, I needed to have that. I don't know. Sometimes the world is set up against certain people, and like you have to have something to legitimize you.
Right.
To like your employers or to an institution or whatever.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's my only argument for college. Besides, it's enriching, but I just think it's really expensive.
I know.
It's not for everyone.
I know. Well, you went to, you're going to a state school.
Yeah.
I went to a private school, which was the biggest mistake. I mean, not because of the experience. I love the experience, but it's just like the debt.
The debt is incredible. Yeah. And the, I was just reading a piece about a man about to die. He's on his deathbed, but his student loans are 10 times the amount of what he originally borrowed.
Wow.
And his debt is being garnished from his Social Security, from his pension.
That's
I'm
awful.
Like, that's not fair. Like, at some point you have to cut it off and be like, cap the amount of debt you can go into.
Right. Well, I think now they have a new thing where if you originally borrowed more than $100,000, I think after 10 years, it was,
if you're working in a nonprofit.
Right, you're nonprofit.
It's an Obama
and
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see if Trump finds it. Hopefully he won't find that piece of legislation. Just don't worry about that.
So when do you expect to finish at Long Beach?
I'm set for spring 2018.
Okay.
So I have 3 semesters left. And I'm taking 5 classes per semester because I'm just like trying to get out of there.
Right.
And also financial aid is, I don't know how that works either. So, just trying to.
And what do you hope? So what are you hoping your next step would be after that? I mean, are you wanting to be a museum professional?
No.
Or do you want to like now be just a writer?
Well, I don't want to be in museums. I would work in a museum as a temporary thing.
Mm-hmm.
People always say that and they like end up their careers in museums. I worked in enough museums to realize that I didn't want to be in a museum.
Like you don't want to be a curator?
No. I mean, it seems dreamy, but the to get to that level, I'm not interested in that.
Okay.
I'm like, life's too short. And I just don't enjoy climbing, really. I don't think I'm good at it. Like, socially climbing and, like, networking and all that. I don't like doing that. Not that that's what it takes solely to, you know, get to the top of the museum world.
Right.
But it is so political. That it, I would either want to work in a really small space and let me do what I wanted, or not work. I'm actually more interested in... So the field is called spatial feminism, and it's basically how city space affects gender relations.
Okay.
So I'm looking at programs for grad school that have to do with visual culture and architecture and urbanism. So I wrote a piece about a month or two ago about housing, gendered housing, and how, or gendered homelessness.
I saw that one.
Yeah, how it affects women and people who are feminine. And that just really blew my mind after writing the piece about how women feel in public space and how that's documented and so I think I'm really interested in going into maybe, there's a program in New York called Urban Homesteading Program through NYU, and it's basically like a tenants' right organization, but for the creative class, which is like artists.
Right.
So I'm interested in like how a city accommodates its artists and how that affects gentrification and how artists can potentially displace people who've been living in the area for years and different communities. So how... kind of like a roving class artists affect city structure mm-hmm. and how development affects class and our social interactions and gender relations and walkability and all that stuff. So I think the more I take classes in gender, the more I'm interested in how I can incorporate activism into my academic career. Because I wouldn't mind teaching.
Right.
And I know that's like a... I was about to say it's a pretty good way to make money. And I was like, that's not what I mean. Because that's not true. It's a good way to segue from academia to a job right. or like a career. And I kind of feel like teaching is, if you do have the chance to get a high level of education, it's kind of your way. I feel like that's how you pay your ticket.
Yeah.
It's how you give back, because education is such a, I feel like literacy and education is a really strong way for people to politicize and become organized and to fight the power, basically, yeah. through education.
Yeah.
So teaching to me, it's, I feel really strongly about. And then for like a job, I'd love to work in housing or urban homesteading or...
Right.
I don't know. So, and then writing, of course, I think.
So definitely non-profit, but for, yeah.
Oh gosh, yeah. I guess I didn't look at it that way. So yeah, I'm going into the non-profit sector.
Yeah, yeah. But for the betterment of people.
Yeah, I hope so. Like, yeah, I'd really like to be some sort of advocate.
Yeah.
Either through writing or through work. And I do love art, and I would love to, like, continue being an arts writer, but I just don't know, like, how far criticism could take me, like, financially.
Right.
So I plan on having 3 to 5 jobs for the rest right. of my life, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just sounds like you're more interested in, you just want to do what you're interested in,
mm-hmm.
and that's all that matters.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. I chase my curiosity, basically, and if you can make it support you, I think.
Right.
People should.
Yeah.
I do love art. I don't love the art world.
Okay. Why is that?
I don't know. It's just, I don't like the art world because it tends to be so political, and the art community that I enjoy is the DIY one. It's mm-hmm. the one of like young people making spaces out of borrowed space. Or the last piece I wrote for Carla was about this rooftop space called Gate LA.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically this couple, Sam and Megan, they live in this live workspace and they have access to the roof, and everyone in their building is like, yeah, put a gallery up there, who cares? So it's a satellite gallery and they put up art when the weather is nice, which is most of the time. And then you just go to see the art that way. And it doesn't displace anyone's, you know, it doesn't signal to the neighborhood that it's about to be gentrified.
Right.
Because a lot of pop-up spaces, for better or for worse, have become a symbol of gentrification.
Right.
Which is a weird negotiation, because the people who are starting those spaces are usually grad students who have just graduated or have work that needs to be shown, but they don't have access to, like, a gallery. It's almost like an approach to self-publishing. It's like, okay, if I can't get my work out there, I have to do it myself. And having a space is great, but it also is this weird symbol of art washing. Like,
yeah.
It's called art washing as a symbol of gentrification. So I'm interested in figuring that problem out, but I don't really know. But beyond that, the art world, I feel like, I don't like schmoozing.
Yeah.
When I want to, I'm good at it. But when I don't, I'm just kind of like, I'm like, obviously don't care, you know, and I'm bad at faking it, so.
You're funny because, like, I mean, for me, it's funny you mention that, because for me, I've always wanted to work in a museum.
Yeah.
And the idea of why I wanted to work in a museum was I just thought, and I still do believe it, museums are meant to be leader of cultural institutions.
Absolutely.
And the more and more I've worked at different institutions or just interned at different places,
yeah.
the more and more I realize how different they view themselves as a leader of cultural institutions.
Right.
And I am starting to formulate what I believe is the right and wrong way to do it.
Right.
But the one thing I realized real quick was no matter where you go, there's always going to be politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. There's always a board.
I learned that the hard way.
Because I
remember arguing with people saying, like, there's no politics in art. That's why I'm going to do it.
That's no politics
in the museum. That's why I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And even when I worked at USD as an executive assistant at parent relations office, unexpectedly, there was all these politics.
Yeah.
For me, I like the politics.
That would be perfect.
Yeah, I know. But like, but again, it was one of those things that took me to work at my current position.
Right.
To figure out that I'm like, oh,
I got to do this too.
Right. And it takes a special person or navigate their way through the politics and then still find the joy in the position.
And also, like, navigate towards what you want the museum to be, too. It's definitely a special person.
Because that's how I am. As I'm starting to get to the point where, like, all right, I really want it to be this way. But in order to get through that, I have to go through all these little hoops and, like, negotiate and barter. And I think what kept me in the game still is that I still find satisfaction in that when I finally get it done and it happens.
And they say yes.
And they say yes. And I'm like, yeah. And like, that's what I had to do all these things. But yeah, it could be exhausting.
I mean, that's the way you describe it makes it sound exciting again. I'm like, let me do it.
Well, I mean, again, it goes down to what are you passionate about? As long as what it is that you're trying to gain at the end is something you're passionate about, that's what matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, I think I'm interested in talking to a bunch of different types of people, like figuring out what their like language is. Because I'm thinking about, there's this essay that the contractor who helped make Spiral Jetty wrote, and his perspective on it was really interesting because it's about the rocks and like how we transported the rocks. It has nothing to do with theory, nothing to do with like the ephemerality of nature or whatever.
Because we're always so used to hearing the artist's work, or, you know, because he published that book about it.
And in that book, But it's this guy's like, this crazy hippie came into my office in the middle of the afternoon and said, I want to make this spiral out of the thing. And I was like, okay. So it's about his interaction with Smithson. And I was like, I want to talk to that guy. Yeah. Like, I'd be interested in talking to, like, you know, if I was trying to negotiate an art show in a building, I'd want to, like, talk to the landlord and then go chat with the code inspector and then go talk to the art person. So I think, I don't know, it is exciting to negotiate, I think, with different types of people and figure out like how to make one thing cohesive and how it all connects together. But that still is exciting to me, but I don't want to do it. I don't want to wake up early.
Yeah. It's good. Well, it's got to be in the environment you want.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Because otherwise you just be miserable.
I feel like I would dismantle something from the inside out. That would be like my response. I wouldn't just quit. I'd be like, I'm going to burn this place. Which is a bad part of my personality. But that's like, I need to find a productive way to do that.
Right.
Which would be like activism, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So what do you have next coming up? Like in terms of, is there anything that you wrote that's coming up?
Sort of. I have an assignment. I have one assignment. I have plans for assignments, but I haven't pitched them yet. But I'm working on a piece. Atlantic has this like side blog project called Object Lesson. Mm-hmm. It's basically like the history of section of Broadly Vice that like you pick an object and you write about it basically. So I'm writing a short history of power dressing.
Okay.
Which I was supposed to, it was assigned in April. And I was like, okay, I have until the election because Hillary will win and it'll be like Pantsuit Nation and it'll be a perfect segue. And that didn't happen. And then I kind of was like, do I need this piece? And I was kind of, I was talking about it with my friend and she's great. She's like, maybe it's more relevant than ever because power is a different thing now. We're all looking at power differently now because we have this person in office being sworn into office who, you know. So I'm working on that. And then I'm interested in writing some pieces about walking in LA because there's a lot of places that don't have sidewalks.
Right? It's LA.
Yeah, it's LA. It's like landscape and then like empty lots and then really fast cars. So I'm interested in that. And there's also a development plan to make LA more walkable, but it's basically demolishing areas where people walk anyway. So there are people, I know, it's areas where people, their daily lives.
It's like Chavez Ravine.
Exactly.
We're going to destroy this place where people live so we can create a place where people can go hang out.
Exactly. We don't like the way you're doing it. We're going to make it this way. And then no one's going to hang out here. Yeah, exactly. So that idea of like useless planned obsolescence, basically. And it's basically like a kickback for the city and developers. And I want to find the like henchmen in there and expose them. So I'm looking at that. And then I'm working on a proposal for an art show about LA as a city. So LA isn't really a city in my opinion, but it is a city.
Why you say that?
Well, because I spent like 2 weeks in New York and I was like, this is a city, you know? And, like, walking around here, I'm like, this is a city. Like, there's people out. Commerce is happening, but there's also interactions, and there's signs and decay, but it's old and it's new and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of that is happening in LA, but it's mostly all new stuff. Or the areas that are old are utilized differently. So I guess I'm thinking about, like, what could prove that LA is a city.
Yeah.
So I guess taking the structure of, like, LA is more of a giant neighborhood that's sprawled out. Do we have a city center? Why is it always empty if we do? what makes LA a city if it is?
Right.
Is it or isn't it?
Yeah.
So, and that'll be a small show. I haven't finalized anything, so I don't want to say where it is, but hopefully in spring.
Okay.
Yeah, school. Hopefully publishing more. I need to kind of, I've been on vacation for like a month, I feel like, so.
Well, I'm glad that your vacation took you here.
Yeah,
I mean,
me
this
too.
Is great. I'm glad we're finally able to connect over this interview.
I know.
Yeah, and I appreciate you coming on, and I would love to have you on again.
Sure.
And talk about, like, anything pertinent to what's going on. And
absolutely.
And then anything that has to do with, I think, because it seems like you're more the LA art scene is what it seems like. More.
Yeah, I think so.
Days. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it would be great to have you on again.
Yeah. I'll be a correspondent if you want.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks. All right, that's it for today. I want to thank everybody for listening, and most especially I want to thank Angela for taking time from her holiday break to come meet and talk to me. To learn more about Angela and her work, be sure to visit her site at heyangela.com, where you'll find a list of various exhibits that she has organized, as well as a list of articles she has written, such as the Washington Post piece we talked about earlier, titled "I Waited Until I Was 30 to Go to College, Best Decision Ever," and other pieces that she's written, such as A Brief History of Women's Housing in Los Angeles that she wrote for the Atlantic's City Lab. You can also follow her on Instagram at HeyAngela. And lastly, be sure to follow the Art Team Podcast on either Instagram or Twitter at Art Team PC. And be sure to spread the word about the show as well by leaving a comment on iTunes. The more comments we get, the more visibility the podcast gets. All right, enough self-promotion. Thanks again for listening, and I wish you all a happy new year. Till next time, everyone.